Penguin Random House Audio presents The Violence Inside Us, A Brief History of an Ongoing American Tragedy by Chris Murphy. Read for you by the author.
For Shane, Dylan, and the countless other brilliant young lives cut far, far too short. It was always the becoming he dreamed of, never the being. F. Scott Fitzgerald, This Side of Paradise. Preface. For the life of me, I can't remember what my first grade classmate Paul did to prompt me to challenge him to a fight after school. I vaguely recall an exchange of mean words in the classroom, immediately triggering an instruction from my mother to stand up for myself if bullied. So I told Paul, who may or may not have actually been bullying me, to meet me after school at the bottom of the hill, next to the woods behind Emerson Williams Elementary School. In retrospect, I probably overreacted to whatever slight I perceived, but our spat soon became the buzz of our first grade classroom, and a bunch of kids followed us down the short hill to watch us square off. The bout lasted all of 10 seconds. Before I could get in a swing, Paul leveled me with an open hand right across my mouth, knocking out one of my loose front teeth. I scurried home crying, tail between my legs, and immediately grabbed a pencil from the kitchen drawer and scratched Paul's name off the class list posted on our bulletin board in an effort to erase him from existence. Though the details of the squabble are fuzzy, I do have a strong recollection of the adrenaline surge that raced through my body as I readied for my first fistfight, and my desire to seek revenge once I had been embarrassed. I was wire-thin, the skinniest kid in my class, but at the moment, I felt like I was designed to fight. Of course, I was wrong about my pugilistic skills, but it is true that deep inside all of us, especially males, is a genetic code and neurology that pushes us, under the right circumstances, to want to hurt others. Our bodies are fighting machines, and our minds are wired to use this machine to protect ourselves from danger and advance our own interests when necessary, prompting both pint-sized tantrums and adolescent fights all the way to world wars. Human beings have a trigger for violence that is virtually unmatched in the animal kingdom. Maybe once or twice in your life, you've sensed an uncomfortable desire to put your hands on someone who has done harm to someone you loved or done something to send you into a momentary rage. Maybe you've even acted on this instinct. If you have, you're not alone. Occasionally, less now than in eras past, our predilection to hurt others results in one person ending the life of another or causing immense life-changing harm to someone else. Violence is unquestionably inside us, whether we want it or not. This American land, dating all the way back to the times before Europeans ever set foot on this soil, has always been particularly fertile ground for violence. In the early days, tribes of Native Americans patrolled vast swaths of territory, using violence and the threat of it to settle disputes with other tribes over living, hunting, and fishing space. Some estimates suggest that pre-Columbian America was one of the most violent places on the face of the earth. European settlement did nothing to help. At first, the settlers limited gun ownership to only a handful of members, but soon they realized that firearms gave them an advantage over the tribes from which they desired to take the same living, hunting, and fishing space that had been the subject of intertribal conflict for centuries. This relatively new technology provided the recent arrivals to America with a highly efficient means to establish dominance on the continent. Then the original settlers were joined by waves of new migrants from Ireland, Scotland, Italy, Germany, Poland, and Russia. The same friction that had sparked conflict between colonists and Native Americans now brought these new Americans, vying for economic and political space in the New World, to blows at abnormally high rates. Weapons innovators Samuel Colt and Oliver Winchester were there to exploit these tensions and provide both sides with efficient means to turn ordinary arguments deadly in an instant. Meanwhile, the early American economy was predicated on the use of regular, routine violence to brutally compel enslaved people from Africa to work the New World's land for free. America was violent because the entire country, especially the southern states, which were more reliant on large-scale agriculture, became inured to violence. It became a foundational tool and a baseline condition of American politics and economics. Today, America is left to deal with this legacy of violence. The nature of our country, a melting pot of different races and ethnicities and nationalities, likely means that we will always be a more violent place than others. We shouldn't give up on the project of breaking down the unreasonable, nonsensical prejudices that exist between people who look or sound different from one another. But tribalism is deeply ingrained in biology and sociology. The instinct to view other groups as a threat to our own is probably not going to disappear anytime soon. America's commitment to heterogeneity is our core strength, but it also exposes us to rivalry and conflict and, for the time being, to rates of human-on-human harm that separate us from other nations. Our violence now comes in different forms than it did centuries ago. Settlers no longer march into Native American villages and systematically shoot hundreds of innocent children. Instead, young men robed in military clothing and hardware walk into schools and churches and use diabolically efficient weapons to kill dozens in minutes. Gangs of immigrants don't engage in open warfare on New York City street corners, but on those same streets, young people of color are brutally beaten by police officers and sometimes resort to violence as a means of survival, having been robbed of more legitimate pathways by a legacy of systematic oppression. Duels are a thing of the past, but more people now use guns and other methods of self-harm to kill themselves than ever before. Violence by a male against his spouse is no longer given the cover of law, but that doesn't mean that coercive domestic violence, still too often hidden behind closed doors, isn't a pervasive threat to the lives of women across the country. And we don't reserve our unique brand of violence for only our own citizens. American-made weapons now find their way to all corners of the earth, making dangerous places even more deadly. American armies blanket the globe. When deployed to regions where conflicts can't be solved with the application of rifles, tanks, and aircraft carriers, our unrivaled military often ends up creating as many antagonists as it eliminates. The good news is that human beings in general, and Americans specifically, have inside us the power to do something about our tendency to want to hurt each other. No act of violence against another is inevitable. History has taught us the methods through which we can set up rules and social norms to reduce the likelihood that bloodshed will be used to advance economic or social interests. Time and again, as responsive governments and large integrated economies provide individuals with less risky ways to prosper, violence rates begin to plummet. The manners revolution and the empathy revolution, both facilitated by the spread of common information through the invention of the printing press, further depressed the acceptability of violence against others. Today, the safest places in America are those that make it just a little harder for people who want to hurt others to get their hands on a gun that will do the job. Well-designed rules to discourage violence save lives. The rules don't make themselves, of course. Today in America, the companies that sell the weapons that do all the damage have a great incentive to keep the flow of guns unchecked. Weapons manufacturers make enormous profits by selling complicated killing machines to countries and groups across the world. Political actors on the right effectively use the issue of gun rights as an overbroad proxy to argue against the incursion of big government into the private life of citizens. And the wealthy and powerful have rigged the economy to imprison millions of Americans in a cycle of poverty and violence from which there is less hope of escape now than at any time before in our country's history. The status quo of American violence is sticky, and so it requires a movement of epic size and volume to dislodge it. In the past few years, that movement has grown wings. And across America, citizens have risen up to make the case to their neighbors that private gun ownership and gun safety can coexist. Peace organizations have convinced Congress to pass legislation to stop...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?